thanks for being with us here on the New Life Show, a series of talks with Dr. Michael Lightman, the founder of the Kabbalah Lam Association. Hello. Hello, everyone. Hello, Tal Mandelbaum Ben Moshe. Hello. Today we have a very interesting topic. Be ready for many surprises. Tal, please. So, as a person who grew up in a secular environment and I have no desire of becoming religious, I am very curious about our culture, the culture of our people, and today we'd like to talk about a topic that there are plenty of feelings about it, and especially negative feelings among the secular population, the topic of the Torah and mitzvot. It even became something threatening. Don't try to impose Torah and mitzvot on me. And it's kind of irrational, a collection of laws, hard to understand what's standing behind them. I remember that I once heard different laws about how it's allowed to use a rag on Shabbat, you can't wring it, and this and that. It was very strange. Why would a person want to go down to so many details? Where does it come from? And sometimes I heard about the Netilat Yadayim, the ritual hand washing, that there is a kind of a rationale behind it and how the meat is processed. Yes, there is a certain wisdom behind these things, but in general, the keeping of the Torah and mitzvot seems as something very unclear and irrational. And today we'd like to talk about it a bit to better understand what stands behind it. Why does it evoke so much resistance in us, and can we see it from a different perspective? And understand that, yeah, maybe there are things that we didn't think about. And the first question is, can we see the Torah and mitzvot from a different perspective than we know? First of all, it's really unfortunate to discover the attitude that people have towards the Torah and mitzvot, especially in Israel. I'm really sorry to see what's happening around the world when I travel to different countries, from the far eastern part of Russia up to Moscow, their European center, and all of Europe, from the north to the south, with the Jews living in the different places in the U.S., which I relatively know very well, with its Judaism. And really, everywhere I see ignorance about what Torah and mitzvot are. And not only among the seculars, but also among the religious. Because the Torah and mitzvot, it is something that no one understands or knows what it is. The Torah and mitzvot, it's actually the system of laws of the upper world that controls us. The system of governance and providence, which is working on us, and that we have to gradually adapt ourselves to it to the extent to which we grow, and from generation to generation we grow more and more, and we need to get closer and closer to the system of governance and providence in order to connect with it and to be as one. And no one thinks about it, doesn't understand about it, never heard about it, he was never taught about it. But this is actually what happened at the birth of Judaism by Abraham, our patriarch. What did he tell those people he lived among, where he was one of the spiritual leaders of Babylon back then? That there is a system that's controlling us right now. We're in crisis because we're not adapted to that system. We have to change. This system is constantly changing. Its providence and its governance over us is changing. And accordingly, we have to change. We have to adapt ourselves. That's called to reach equivalence of form, reciprocity, harmony with that ever-changing system. And this is what he taught the people. Many people joined him, people that wanted to understand and know what's going on because they were experiencing a general crisis, much similar to what we're experiencing today in the world. And accordingly, he built his great big group. Maimonides even says tens of thousands, with whom he went to the land of Canaan, he left Babylon, and that group called themselves Israel, meaning Yashar Kel, meaning directly advancing through interchange, wanting to become like that system, to take upon themselves the laws of that system. The upper system that's controlling us, it's a network of different forces. But actually they have one law, reciprocity, connection. In a mutual complete participation between them, these forces are working on us, and when they operate us, they're constantly pushing us towards greater connection, on the one hand. On the other hand, we, and it's interesting, are operated by our nature in a different way, in an opposite way, where we actually want to distance from each other, to disregard each other, in as there's the ego, the force of separation, rejection, the reciprocal disconnection and rejection that's constantly growing. And so it follows that there are two systems here. The one system called the shattered system within the person that constantly wants to use the others in his own favor, for his own benefit, and to disrespect and disregard everyone else. What's bad for the other is good for me. What's good for me, I don't care about the others, on the one hand. And on the other hand, this system, the way it grows, the evil inclination in us, the very same way it closes upon us from above, through the force of connection, that it necessitates us towards connection, and we are in a tough spot, and we have no idea what to do. Because we really don't understand what's going on. And the first to discover it was Abraham that revealed it to the Babylonians. And he started teaching them how, in this world that we exist in, how do we exist in it? How can we exist in it? And here we see that what he taught them was love thy neighbor as thyself, which is the gist rule of the Torah, the main rule. This is what he taught them. Avraham is chesed, the quality of mercy. And this is how they've advanced. And they had just this simple thing, don't do to another what you hate, love another as thyself from the bottom of your heart, in every possible way, in all your tendencies towards each other. All that that group went through was only in accordance with that rule of love thy neighbor as thyself. And they knew better how to do it because, as it's written, that our forefathers kept the entire Torah even before the giving of the Torah because they felt it from within themselves out of the purity of their soul, so to speak. And through the simple relations between them, this is how they kept it. The law of love thy neighbor as yourself. And that's all there is. That's the rule of the entire Torah, of the whole of reality, where eventually all of the parts of reality, still vegetative, animate, and of course the human part, through that group called Israel, that small group called Israel, have to reach a complete and perfect connection. And this is what Abraham taught them, and this is what they kept. How did they keep it? By feeling that this is how it's supposed to be. This is how their relations should be. They still had a small will to receive. as it was 3,500 years ago. They understood these things of themselves, especially that they've experienced different blows in Babylon and the entire crisis they've experienced there. It made them more sensitive. Yes, because suffering makes a person more sensitive. And so it was until they started feeling that their ego is suddenly growing more and more. They're becoming harsher towards each other, more deaf towards the needs of each other, the sorrow of another. That's called that they have received oviut, coarseness, thick skin. Each one for himself. That's called Pharaoh, the Egyptian exile. And then against that separation, the distance between them, where they stopped feeling each other like before, but they distanced from each other a few meters. Then they already needed a new method of how to reach love atop this new ego, this new level. And the new method, this new method, is already called Torah. That it's not that I simply relate nicely to others and they do the same and we come closer and we give each other an example and we come together until we start feeling that love is really burning between us and that we can be ever more close and how good it is and that it gives us a good and nice and secure life. But atop the new ego, I can't see that. I become deaf to the sorrow of others. I don't want to invest anything myself in favor of others. And then, through Moses, which was their leader, they discovered that there is a method how to correct the distance, how to make it something that brings us closer, that all the more, the ego that grew in them this way, that suddenly accelerated. That's called the Egyptian exile and Pharaoh. How can we make it into something good? And they took on this method called Torah. And this is already a different method where we don't love each other. We're around Mount Sinai, around our hatred. In Hebrew, Sinai is from the word sinah, hatred. So we're not necessarily talking about the mountain, but about our separation. And we're doing different exercises. We're taking different actions, where these actions are called arvut, mutual responsibility or mutual guarantee, being as one man and one heart, to try and reach that arvut, that mutual responsibility. And then, by keeping these laws in a group, in our society, we are in anticipation of a special upper force called Torah, a special illumination that reforms each and every one. And this is how they started implementing this condition, that if you'll start coming closer to each other, uniting your hearts as much as you can, doesn't matter. If you succeed, you do. If you don't, you don't. But the main thing is that you want it. The effort is the main thing. You put in a certain intensity, each one of you towards the other, revoking his pride, setting a good and nice example towards each other. To this day, we have the same laws written by the Kabbalists, especially by my teacher, the Rav Baruch Shalom Ashlag. And this is what we're using to this day, the same method. Meaning we're using the Torah. What does it mean, Torah? In Hebrew, Torah comes from the word Torah, instruction, and all light. So we're using the light that awakens between us if we treat each other this way. Artificially, we're drawn to each other, we're pushed towards proximity. And this closeness between us, it's not about making a good and nice society between us, that we'll be intelligent, nice, good people, with some English manners, not at all. But we're aiming at the reforming light for it to come to us and work on us and tie us together by ties of love. Why do we need this love? Because by that, I adapt myself to the upper system, like it was once in the times of the forefathers. Now, it's in the times of the sons. The difference between the fathers and sons is that the sons are using the illumination, the reforming light. The fathers didn't need it. They used the same light, but not on purpose that they had to draw it. But the evil inclination, the desire, was still small. They also came from the Babylonian shattering, and they understood that it's preferable for us to do this. They had a small will to receive, simple life, and it worked. And in the times of the sons, it no longer worked. Here you really have to draw force from above, and this is what they were engaged in. And they discovered that inside each and every one, there are many, many egoistic desires. And in the different forms of relations between them, each operates many different desires towards the others, and that these egoistic desires, each and every person has 613 of these egoistic desires, each and every person, and when they connect between them, they also have the general 613 desires where they connect as one body in mutual completion, and then they started learning what kind of light comes and corrects them atop this egoistic desire and atop that egoistic desire. And this is what they wrote. They wrote it in such a way that is called the language of the branches. They wrote, how do we have to relate to an egoistic desire on the still level? Then on the vegetative level, where it's already changing, there are different formulas to how it changes. On the animate level, that's also changing, but furthermore, it begets and lives and dies, and instead of it begets new desires. These desires are our entire life. We don't understand it, but I live now because inside me they're constantly burning and changing desires. These come and these go and these die and these live and beget new desires all the time, and in these desires I live and in these desires I feel the world. Can you give an example? It's not an example, it's the truth. And what were a simple example. What I see now before me are those different desires within me that are connected in different ways between them, and this is what they present me with, the picture of the world. That's a bit of a separate topic. I understand that it's not easy, but that's how it is. Now, I live inside the desires. That's all there is. It's my character. It's my nature. It's me. And these desires are constantly changing. And I see them, these desires, and they're egoistic. And I see them on the background of the white light, on the background of the quality of bestowal and love. And I see myself in different shades, in different forms of the egoistic connection of desires within me. And then these desires, they form the world that I see. And therefore, in the wisdom of Kabbalah, it's called the imaginary world. And this is what they've discovered, that there is the Torah, the light, that corrects me. And then, instead of seeing the whole world as black, egoistic, truly lacking, I start seeing a new world, a world which I correct, and I see the spiritual world. What's the difference? Because in the relations between us that we build in that group that Moses built, then we see that we are really building a new world. At first, it's not simple. We discover the sin of the golden calf, that we're all in sin, that we're all in a horrific reciprocal ego, and there is a mountain of hatred between us, Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, full of reciprocal hatred among everyone. And then we start pulling more light and more light, and this is how we advance in our correction. In the meantime, these corrections are called the 40 years in the desert. And then, later on, there's the transition to the next correction through Yoshua, that's called the force, general force that's leading us instead of Moses, Moshe, where we are entering between us a state called the Land of Israel, a state, inner state between us, where we build such a relationship between us that no longer that we don't simply do wrong to each other, that's called the 40 years in the desert, but we also could cause good to each other, the desire to love, to connect between us. This is already called the degree of the Land of Israel, by which we become like the upper force, just like he is bestowing onto us in general, so are we bestowing onto each other. And then in the connection between us, we discover this upper force in practice, and the upper world, and the spiritual state, and an eternal, complete life, different from our life, where I live and die like an animal. And this is the level we have to come to. And not only we, but we have to also take all the people in the world with us, and everyone will have to do it, and everyone will have to correct within himself the 613 desires. That's called keeping the Tariag 613 mitzvot. And we will reach a state like our prophets write about, that all of us will become as one. All the people of the world as one society. It's truly a different interpretation than we know. Yes, the mitzvot are the corrupted desires within a person that need correction, and the Torah is that force which corrects each and every desire, inverting it from in order to receive its egoistic form to in order to bestow, doing good onto others, its altruistic form, and that's called Torah and mitzvot. And therefore, the general law of the world and bring all the people all together to a good and nice reciprocal connection. Action, and all that by the upper light called Torah. There are many questions, but maybe we can try and explain why do we see the Torah and mitzvot in the way that we see it today, with plenty of customs and details. What does it have to do with love and connection that you talked about, which sounds very rational and nice, but somehow today we see something completely different as Torah and mitzvot. When those people starting with those that came to Abraham, and then those that went through Isaac and Jacob onto Moses and so on, kept the ties between them. They started feeling all of their desires in a transparent way, meaning still vegetative, animate speaking, also in this world, they started seeing it as a part of reality itself. And therefore, suddenly, it became clear to them that just like they refer to their relations on the still vegetative, animate, or speaking levels, these are the degrees of the desires between us. The very same way, naturally, it would be right for me to relate this way to everything that's around me corporeally, which doesn't change. But here too, I behave in accordance with the same laws. They also started to explain to each other and teaching the children and learning themselves according to the language in which they started calling the upper forces in a language called the language of the branches, because in spirituality there is no language, and in the corporeal world there is, and everything there is in spirituality, there's the forces, they come down to this world, and in this world they create certain objects, let's call them, actions. And therefore, they understood that they have a ready language, that instead of saying about some spiritual force that I have in my soul and the relations between us and somehow point it out, we can't point it out. We don't have the words for it. So instead of that, I can call it by the name of its branch in this world. These are things that we need a separate talk in order to explain it all, but this is where they got the language from, first of all, in order to speak about the spiritual world, and also they got this special kind of behavior and corporeality, where they were in corporeality, they started behaving like in spirituality to show the willingness to be in this inner kind of relation, also in corporeal matters, but it is only an addition, because by our corporeal behavior, we don't change anything in spirituality. And the fact is that even the great Kohen, the great priest that did everything right besides his inner work, would die. It comes to tell us that no corporeal action is beneficial whatsoever for a person's spiritual ascent in order for him to implement the thought of creation on himself. Our time's up. I see that we touched only one drop out of a great ocean. True. And I hope we can continue talking about it. Thank you very much. Thank you, Tal. Thanks for being with us. Till next time, all the best.